Welcome to the Wellsteading Podcast. This is episode 51. It's December 6th, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. My mission here at the Wellsteading Podcast is to teach you the 10 wealth building principles and encourage you to apply them in your life so that you can not only build your net worth and become financially independent, but more importantly, so that you can attain personal freedom. In every episode, I try and put an emphasis on one or more of the 10 wealth building principles. If you're new to the show or you're unfamiliar with the 10 wealth building principles, go back and listen to the first 10 episodes of this podcast. That's where I explain to you what the 10 wealth building principles are, and I try and lay down that foundation. On subsequent episodes, we can always come back with a reference to saving or investing or earning power. And sometimes it's maybe just about giving or leading a more productive lifestyle and less of a consumptive lifestyle. Well, in the previous show, I did promise that this episode would be about the importance of interest rates, and I also plan to do a couple updates for you during the week. I fell behind. I was very busy. As we get to the end of the year, there's generally a lot of paperwork to get done, a lot of interaction with clients, and then most years, and this year is no exception, the markets have been extremely active. So I got a little tied up in my day-to-day business and didn't get the opportunity to come here and give you some episodes. So I'm going to try and make up for it. I'm going to try and definitely get two in this weekend. And then as we move into the end of the year, you'll probably be getting more updates throughout the week to keep up with these ever changes in the market as we see the S&P continue to make new highs and as we approach that 2100 level on the S&P 500. I think we're going to have the classic Santa Claus rally, and that's what I want to be here to cover for you and to give you my interpretation of. In any case, I did want to talk about interest rates. That's very important. It's very prescient to what's going on in the economy right now. However, because of some other items that have been recently in the news, I'm going to put the discussion on interest rates off until tomorrow's episode, the next episode. Today, I want to focus on what's called purchasing power parity. And the reason I bring this up is I alluded to it in the previous episode when I was talking about global GDP, when I was talking about all the different countries and how they stack up to America and why America's dollar is so strong and why it's been especially strong in the last 6 months, and why I don't think you should believe the naysayers that are constantly talking about economic collapse and in particular the downfall of the U.S. dollar, while at the same time they talk up something ridiculous like the Iraqi dinar or, you know, in my opinion, like the Russian economy or the Chinese economy. Now, again, I want to put the disclaimer out like I did in the previous episode. I'm not saying that our economy isn't built on a facade and a house of cards that could collapse at any minute. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the most of these naysayers are trying to hype it up and trying to scare you, usually to get you to buy something. You know, whether it's their newsletter or their book or their precious metals or some other type of product or service. And again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't own precious metals. I'm not opposed to that. I'm just saying there's a time and a place for everything. And in my opinion, the U.S. dollar isn't collapsing anytime soon. Certainly not in the next 2 or 3 weeks, like you hear some of these, you know, talking heads and these promoters talk about on their shows or their infomercials or you know, their newsletters, whatever you want to call them. So again, here's my point that I'm trying to make. I'm not saying that the U.S. economy isn't fragile. What I'm saying is that everybody else is as bad or worse, right? We're the cleanest dirty shirt. We're the nicest house in a bad neighborhood. We're the tallest midget. You can use whatever kind of analogy you want to, but when our country goes down, everybody else goes down too. The old saying used to be, and it still applies today, whenever the United States gets a cold, the rest of the world gets pneumonia. Now in 2008, a lot of people didn't think we were going to have a contagion. They thought, oh, it's just the U.S., it's just their excesses, it's just their subprime loans. I remember being in Europe in late 2008 through 2009. I remember seeing really smug Europeans, particularly the French and the Germans, just looking down their nose at us, shaking their finger, wagging their finger, telling us, oh, you Americans, you're so wasteful, you're so this, you know, your economy's just so unstable. Well, you know what? Within 6 months, they fell apart too. And they're currently worse off than we are right now. As is Russia, as is Brazil, as is China, as is India, the list goes on and on. The United States remains the strongest and the biggest market in the world. We have the largest GDP, and that's not going to change anytime soon, particularly again in the next couple weeks or couple months when people are trying to hype things up and sell you things. If you haven't yet, listen to episode 50. You might want to go back and listen to that prior to listening to this episode 51, just so you have a little better basis of understanding what I'm talking about. But the reason I'm bringing this up again and why I'm postponing the episode on interest rates is because within probably about 2 or 3 days of me releasing episode 50, where I talked about U.S. GDP, well, the headlines, I saw it on the Drudge Report, I saw it over at Huffington Post, I saw it in a bunch of places. The headlines were all China, now officially the largest GDP in the world. Well, I don't know. If I remember about 6-7 months ago, they were pitching that same line, and it was based on what they're basing it on now, which is what they call PPP, Purchasing Power Parity. And that's why, since that has just come up in the news, I wanted to reiterate it. And again, I alluded to this in episode 50, but I didn't specifically mention purchasing power parity. Because at the time I was recording the episode, I forgot what they were calling it. So I mentioned it. I mentioned the fact that they had used that in the past, but I didn't know what it was called. And again, like I say, Wednesday, Thursday of this week, boom, it's all over the headlines again. Purchasing power parity. China, the largest GDP. China, dominant economy. China surpasses the U.S. It's not true. Absolutely, positively not true. You can argue about the numbers. You can go to the World Bank. You can go to the International Monetary's website. You can go to the Federal Reserve's website. You can go to the CIA's website where they have a database and a abstract on all the economies and countries in the world. You can go to all these different places and the numbers. You can go to Wikipedia. Wikipedia is, probably the easiest place to go to. You'll see the numbers vary. No matter what website you go to, none of them are ever the same. They all reference different indicators. You can't necessarily trust the numbers coming out of individual countries, specifically countries like China. They're always padding their GDP. So I can't guarantee I have the right numbers. And that's why I'm going to talk in broad terms. But roughly, the United States economy, somewhere between $16 and $18 trillion. I think we're closer to $18 trillion than we are 17, but that's, again, my opinion. It depends whose numbers you believe. But arguably, we're somewhere, I would say, north of $17 trillion. China, if you believe a lot of the latest numbers coming out, they're talking about $10 and $11 trillion. I still go back to the old number of, I think they're lucky if they're $8 or $9 trillion. When you look at their consumption of raw materials, their electrical usage, their importation of things like copper, iron, steel, those aren't growing at the same rates that China claims their economy is growing at. Their overall export growth rate has decreased. And although they're accelerating their internal consumption, it's not making up for the amount that their rate of growth is decreasing on their exports. And so the macroeconomic numbers, if you look at the imports that they're bringing in from countries like Australia or the United States or different places, particularly these raw materials and commodities, they don't support the official growth numbers that are coming out of China. So that's why I say I dispute the fact that they're growing at, say, 7% or that their economy is at $10 trillion. I think it's closer to 8 or 9, but in any case, it doesn't matter. Even if they're at 10 and we're somewhere around 17 or 18, that doesn't make us quite twice as large as them. But certainly, again, if you use my numbers of assuming they're around 9 and we're about 17 or 18, that certainly says that we're about double their size. Again, I don't want to dispute the particular numbers. We're still vastly larger than them. And as I mentioned in episode 50, our efficiency, our productivity, our value proposition is hugely more than theirs. Drastically different. The economies aren't even comparable. If they're doing $8, $9, $10 trillion in GDP, they're doing it with like 1.3 or 1.5 billion people. We're living in an economy where we're producing $17, $18 trillion, and we do it with a population of about 310 million. Right? We have a significantly smaller consumer base, manufacturing base. We're smaller in all categories, drastically smaller. So again, population-wise, it depends what numbers you use, but they're somewhere between 4 to 5 times larger than us, larger than the United States population. Again, just using rough numbers here. This is for conceptual purposes. But if we're around 300 million people and they're somewhere around 1.5 billion, that makes them roughly 5 times larger than we are. But again, our economy is somewhere near twice as large as theirs, maybe only 3/4 larger. Whatever the number, it's still huge when you're talking about the trillions of dollars of differences. And again, the only reason I'm belaboring this point is because of the hysteria I saw in the media this week. And again, from both sides, from the left and the right. And it's simply not true. And there's 2 points I want to make. The first one is how the media and governments and other people propagandize data, how they take data out of context. And then how they spin the headlines and spin the story to propagate their agenda on you, to shape and mold your opinion. And the data they're using is taken out of context, or it's completely made up, or it's totally wrong, or they use some kind of formula from some Ivy League professor, which is asinine. It defies common sense. And that's what they're doing with this purchasing power parity. Now, if you're not familiar with PPP, the rationale behind it is what they're saying that although China's economy is significantly smaller than the United States economy, that in reality, China's economy is actually larger because they have a stronger purchasing power. Or if you put them on an equal purchasing power parity with us, that for that reason, the average Chinese family has to spend less on living expenses. So therefore, you can live cheaper in China. So therefore, even though their economy is significantly smaller than ours, that they're still larger, that they've surpassed us, that they're more dominant, that they're just growing and growing. Well, none of that's true. Okay, China is lucky right now, as I mentioned, to be growing at a 7% rate. They used to be growing at 10, 11, 12%. The projections for them were astronomical. By now, they were already, you know, going to surpass us on nominal GDP terms, but they didn't. They've fallen apart over the last 4 to 5 years. At the same time, our economy has been sputtering for the last, you know, 6 or 7 years. And that's exactly the point I made in the last episode, which is when the United States falters, when it trips, when it stammers along, because we're the largest economy, because we're so dominant, that's a carryover effect. At this point in time, and this may change in the future, but for right now, other countries don't get an economic advantage when we falter because they all sell to us. So when we're not buying, their economies eventually cool off as well. If you want to look for trends, the trends are here in the United States. If our economy is going up, the rest of the world will be following us. If our economy is going down, eventually the rest of the world will be going down as well. With those of us that are concerned about building our wealth, it's important that we identify these patterns and trends. And that's why I bring this whole point up about not believing the hype and the headlines. If you want to keep your focus on track and you want to increase the likelihood of your investments growing, then you need to invest based on reality and not based on propaganda. So let me boil this whole purchasing power parity down to a very simple analogy. I want you to imagine that you have two neighbors. They live across the street from you. Now, one family consists of 8 household members. It's a husband and a wife and 6 children. And then the guy that lives next door to them is just one single man, just one single bachelor. Now, the single bachelor, he makes $100,000 income. And that family that lives next door, that family of 8, they make $50,000 income. Now, any rational human being, anyone that was being honest with themselves, and anyone that was interested in pursuing the truth and then using that truth to, you know, apply economic formulas and, you know, rationality for investment sake or for giving loans or for any other reason why you'd be generating this economic data, they would look at those two households and they would say that the single man with $100,000 income has a higher income, that he's a larger producer than the family of 8 that's only making $50,000. Now, in this analogy, I'm not disputing how efficient and effective an individual family unit is and how a family unit can stretch a dollar well beyond what, say, a single individual would be. I know very well, in fact, from very personal experience, that large families can be very economical, right? I'm a father of 6 children. So again, I know this from firsthand experience. A husband and wife with a large family that manage their money well can build significant wealth, even though they make less money than a single person because of their spending habits. Okay, so I'm not disputing this in this analogy. That's not my point, and I'll come back to that. My point in this analogy is that even though the family of 8 may be more effectively using their dollars, the fact of the matter is that the single man, that individual, he's making twice what they're making. He's making $100,000, they're making $50,000. Now, he may be living paycheck to paycheck, and he may be broke at the end of the month, but at the end of the year, he still makes $100,000. He's a productive individual. His productivity, based on the unit of exchange in America of a dollar, comes out to $100,000 a year. The other family, which again may be very efficient in their use of their money, they may not have the disposable income, and so they live a more frugal lifestyle. They drive an older car. They take fewer vacations. Maybe they don't eat as expensive food on a per capita basis. However you want to boil that down, the fact of the matter still remains that they only made $50,000. They only have $50,000 to work with. They earn half what the single individual does in our example. So what does this have to do with China and purchasing power parity? Well, that's exactly the argument that these people that want to obscure the truth apply to China. They say, oh yeah, sure, China's producing less. Their economy is significantly smaller than the United States. But when you factor in their cost of living and how their purchasing power compared to the U.S. citizen, well, they're living at a higher level and they're getting more bang for their buck. Well, again, like on my analogy, you can't compare the two. Our single man, in my example, is still making twice what the family of 8's making. And in world GDP, the United States is making about twice or more than what the Chinese are making, what their economy's making. It doesn't matter on purchasing power. That parity that they're talking about is more about lifestyle choices, or maybe the lack of lifestyle choices might be a better way to phrase it. Americans choose to live in larger houses. They choose to spend more on food. They choose to drive large automobiles and drive them farther and, you know, commute larger distances. They take more extravagant vacations, right? They spend more on themselves for medical care. On and on and on. That's the way our culture is. That's the resources that our country has to spend. We're a mature society with a very strong economy. So my first point that I'm trying to make here is don't believe the hype. Don't believe the media's manipulation and propagandizing of data. Look at the data yourself and make rational decisions from it. The tell or the tip-off that they're manipulating something is when they don't give you the actual number or the actual data, or they gloss over it. And so when they come up with one of these indexes or indicators, or, you know, they announce a poll or an opinion or something like that, that's when they're interjecting their own bias, their own opinion. The data is objective, but their spin is subjective. And so look for those tells. Look for how they're trying to obfuscate things. And then look at the data yourself. Write down the United States economy, say it's $17, $18 trillion. And then next to it, write down the Chinese economy and say it's $9 or $10 trillion. And then take all the spin, take all the manipulation, take all the purchasing power or parity out of it. Look at those numbers and you tell me which economy is larger. Look at the numbers for yourself. Don't let people lie to you. Now, the second point I want to make about this obfuscation and this propaganda is, why would they be doing that? Why would this government agency or this media company or this political action group, why would they want to spin the news in such a way where they want you to believe that China is stronger than the United States? And that answer will be different from whether it's coming from the left or whether it's coming from the right. But ask yourself that question. You have to not only see that they're telling you a lie or that they're obfuscating the truth, you have to try and determine the reason. You have to try and understand what they're trying to make you think and why they're trying to make you think that, so that you don't do it, so that you don't fall prey to them being able to manipulate you. And as to why these people, again, those on the left and those on the right, both ends of the political spectrum are trying to make hay out of this story for different reasons, I'll let you draw your own conclusions as to what those reasons are. But just don't get sucked into it. Don't let them manipulate you. Keep your emotions level, look at the data, look at reality, and then invest accordingly. Because remember, what you're trying to do is you're trying to build your own personal wealth so you can increase your own personal freedom. You don't care what goes on in the White House. You care what goes on in your house. Again, I'll let you draw your own conclusions as to why people want to manipulate your thoughts on China's dominance. But I will tell you that I, for one, don't believe it. I believe that China's economy will eventually follow down the same path that Japan's economy took over the last 25 years. Japan has been in a major recession for 25 years. They have drastically unsustainable government debt, twice what the United States has. They have a declining population base. They're closed to outside immigration. The Japanese, once mighty and strong economy, which 30 years ago everybody was worried was going to dominate and take over and become number one. It's the same headlines that you read about China today. It's just 30 years ago it used to be about Japan. But Japan has declined and stagnated because they lost the technological advantage and they got beat out on lower sources of production. That lower source of production was Chinese cheap labor, and that technological gap was primarily either technology being taken to China or technology that China acquired or stole from other countries. In any case, Japan's decline over the last 25 years has coincided with China's rise. There was a definitive economic and energy transfer from the island of Japan to the mainland of China. And as I say, China will have the same fate. They will get beat out on technology, which up till now they've seemed incapable of developing on their own. And what will really kill them will be their loss of a competitive advantage due to cheap labor. And I'm not really talking about cheap labor going over to a more competitive country like maybe India or Vietnam. What I'm talking about is automation. The lower manufacturing costs are going to come about through advanced developments in automation, things like 3D printing, things like the integration of big data and the Internet of Everything. Those are all going to result in a drastic reduction in the cost of manufacturing products. And when you combine that with what's going on now with the energy revolution, with the low cost of energy, you're not going to have to make products in China and use their cheap labor. You're going to have machines throughout not only the world, but specifically throughout America, and they're going to be cranking out exactly whatever consumer products people want. In the 1970s in the United States, our manufacturing base got eroded. It was called the Rust Belt. We lost our competitive advantage. We had too high labor costs. Those factories went overseas. Steel production, textiles, any source of high labor, high environmental cost type products all went overseas. Well, we're coming in an age where we're not going to need that cheap labor. Machines, robots, call them whatever you want, it's going to be technology. Advanced technology will replace cheap human labor and make China ineffective. The same way the Chinese cheap labor made Japan less competitive in the 90s and the 2000s, and just like Japan made America less competitive in the 70s and the 80s. The other thing that's wrong with China is the same thing that they share with Japan and unfortunately with a lot of the world, and that's declining demographics. But in China, it's worse. Demographics are working overtime hard against China. They don't have enough young workers coming up to provide that same cheap labor. They don't have enough young workers coming up to fulfill the domestic consumption they need to take them away from being solely an export country. And they don't have enough of a younger generation coming up to economically support the welfare of the older generation. And for those reasons, as a country, China will become old before they become rich. Now, when we come back tomorrow in the next episode, we'll be talking about interest rates. And likewise, they have a very similar story. There's a political agenda, there's obfuscation involved, but interest rates are very key, very important to your ability to earn money and to put your savings and your assets to work for you. Our interest rates have been manipulated for so long, and in particular, so drastically over the last 6-7 years, the markets have become so distorted that it's hard to determine exactly where true north is. But that's what we're going to try and do in the next episode, so come back then. Until then, as always, if you have any questions or concerns or comments, you can reach me through the website, wealthsteading.com. If you haven't done so yet, please go out and for free, you can subscribe to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. And encourage those of you that haven't done so to please go out, rate and review the show, to especially go over to iTunes and rate and review the show. I'd appreciate your efforts. Until next time, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.